What's up, guys? Welcome to the brand spanking new episode of Movie Schmovie.
Movie Schmovie. This is emotional for me because we're on episode 10.
I know, man.
It's crazy.
If this was years, it'd be a whole decade.
It would.
Almost, you know, like a lot's happened in 3 months.
Yeah, a lot.
You've gotten a new place to live.
Yep.
I bought a new car.
That's
we released exciting. 10 podcasts.
Yep.
And we've seen a lot of movies.
A lot.
Good stuff, man. Oh, it's going to keep coming. I have no reason to stop, do you?
No, not at all.
Sweet. So, yeah, thanks for anybody that's even listened to all 10 or maybe one or two or any of them.
Yeah.
It's much appreciated. You know, we see people writing feedback on the iTunes page, like their little ratings that they do. And also just on our official site, people reblogging and liking the posts that we're throwing up there at movieschmovie.net. So yeah, we definitely appreciate, you know, all the interaction that we're seeing. We always ask for more, so, you know, keep the word going. If you have been telling people, keep telling people, because this is what's going to, you know, make something like this keep going.
Please, it's really important. The traffic that we've been getting lately is kind of crazy. It's picking up steam, the blog, because it's becoming kind of a central area that you can come to for information on movies.
Yeah, I mean, it's not just the review anymore. Like, the blog that we have, we try to post or repost information that we're finding from, you know, a lot of credible movie news sites that maybe are a little more popular, or in some cases a lot more popular. Places that we've used for years, you know, as sources for ourselves, but trying to put it out there in a different medium, and, you know, so the people that are following our page can actually see it in case they don't go to those sites. So,
definitely.
You know, so thanks for doing that, and you know, keep the word going. This week, like Ronald said, is number 10, so it's a special one.
It is.
Kind of a really cool movie to talk about this week as our feature, but we're going to start with our Mighty Minute review. And that, this week, is going to be the film The Lincoln Lawyer, which is actually now on DVD.
It is. Starring Matthew McConaughey and Marissa Tomei and Ryan Phillippe.
Phillippe.
Okay. Matt See, Phillippe. I always stumble over Phillippe. That. Yeah.
I mean, I'm sure either way, it doesn't matter.
William H. Macy, and there is a brief appearance by Bryan Cranston. So it's a great movie. It pretty much takes place in a southern area that you're not quite sure
right.
where it is. It's kind of, he's a shady defense attorney, represents pretty much the guilty. They're always guilty, and he gets them off.
Right.
He has ties to all sorts of branches, the judicial system, and he takes advantage of that until he runs into the situation with Ryan Phillippe, where this gentleman is blamed for the murder. No, I'm sorry, for the rape and kidnapping and abuse of a prostitute. And it pretty much unfolds that Ryan Phillippe has been telling a lot of lies, and there's a lot of death that occurs as a result, because this guy has some sort of history in trickery. I don't know what... You're not quite sure what it is.
He's shady. You catch on to that really quickly.
Yeah.
He's a rich boy that gets his way, and you know, he's got a plan. You kind of catch on to that in a little bit. Once you're into the film a little bit. It's a movie based off of a novel of the same name by, I think it's Michael Connelly. Pretty well-known book. Not by me, but by some. Like, when I mention the movie's name, a lot of people know about the book. And it's called Lincoln Lawyer because he actually operates his entire, like, law firm, quote unquote, out of a Lincoln Town car. Yeah. So that's kind of like a little catchy way to do it. But, you know, honestly, like, I heard about this movie when it came out. Not a lot of people saw it. I didn't see it in the theaters. A buddy of mine recommended seeing it once it came on the DVD, and I saw it recently, so did you.
Yeah.
And, you know, honestly, it's one of those movies that I look forward to a lot of times because it's one I have no expectations for. I just happened to watch it on a Sunday afternoon. And I'm just not blown away, but I'm just like thoroughly entertained.
Oh yeah, definitely.
It's a solid legal thriller. A lot of cool little twists. Nice characters. Like the actual cast in the movie, like Ronald was saying, is actually a lot of top notch people. Like William H. Macy and Bryan Cranston, even though it was brief.
John Leguizamo, also in it.
Always a fan.
What's that guy? Michael Pena.
Pena. Yeah.
Okay, that dude's really good in it. It's a cool story. Like I said, it's one of those things that kind of. You have no expectations because it really didn't have much of a buzz when it came out.
Right.
Honestly, it's one of those ones that'll sneak up on you if you're relaxing with somebody, kind of watching a movie. You'll be surprised as to how good it is. It's a really good movie.
Yeah, definitely check it out. It's on DVD now, The Lincoln Lawyer with Matthew McConaughey. It's going to be a nice surprise for you. I'm almost willing to guarantee it. It's dangerous, but I feel pretty comfortable with it.
I think so, too.
I don't throw guarantees out there, but everybody I've recommended it to has had the same response that I did, like where they didn't really know a lot about it or heard mixed things, and if anything. And it's like, wow, that was worth the, you know, $2 rental or go buy it or whatever you want to do with it.
The twists in it aren't really telegraphed either.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? Like you watch it and you're like, oh, what the fuck? What just happened? You know, it's a lot of that.
It's not as predictable, and it's it just happens fast. Like when the ones that do happen, that's kind of what blindsides you a little bit.
Cool movie.
But yeah, it's available now, so check it out. Moving into our featured review this week. A personal favorite of mine from when I was younger, of the horror genre from the 80s, is the film Fright Night. Fright Night has been remade for the new generation. comes out on the 19th of the month, and starring Colin Farrell, Anton Yelchin, Tony Collette, Christopher Mintz-Plasse, and a very special cameo about three quarters of the way through the film. But here's a clip from Fright Night, the 2011 version. Check it out.
Please don't. Please. Get me out of here.
Your neighbor?
Since he moved in, people are disappearing. He doesn't stop until everybody's dead.
What the?
Oh, God.
There will be no fighting, only surviving.
Fright Night.
So, Fright Night, cool movie, takes place in a kind of suburban area. And we're following Charlie, star of the movie. And he is in high school. Very cool kid at this point, but you get the sense that he wasn't at one time.
Right.
His friend Ed, who's played by Christopher Mintz, he is the guy from he's McLovin.
He is McLovin.
McLovin. So McLovin is a very nerdy kid.
Wait, like, can we just refer to him as that from now on?
Oh yeah, okay. Absolutely.
I feel like everybody in the world does. Poor guy, but
right. So McLovin at this point is a very nerdy kid, and he comes up to Charlie during the course of the movie. He's like, you know, why are you not my friend? Why aren't we as close as we used to be? You're wearing skinny jeans and you like sneakers now, and you're part of the cool crowd. And it kind of starts with that sort of tension between the two of them. Now, on top of that, Ed, his friend, suspects that something crazy is going on in the town. Teenagers are disappearing left and right. And he has a sneaking suspicion that one of the people in the neighborhood, particularly Charlie's neighbor, is a vampire.
I really hate to be the one to tell you this, but that guy, your neighbor, yeah, he's a vampire, man.
My neighbor?
Yeah.
Next door?
Yeah.
Jerry, I just met him.
Okay, Jerry.
That is a terrible vampire name, Jerry.
I didn't name him, man. I'm just reporting the facts.
You read way too much Twilight.
That's fiction, okay? This is real. He's a real monster, and he's not brooding or lovesick or noble. He's the shark from Jaws. He kills, he feeds, and he doesn't stop until everybody around him is dead. And I seriously am so angry you think I read Twilight.
So yeah, it takes place at that point, and it's a pretty intense sort of thing. Ed really wants him to see that this guy is a vampire. So he goes about it in some really interesting ways. So one of their friends gets kind of snatched up. They go visit him. Visit the house where he lives, and he realizes that there's no traces of this guy leaving. He didn't pack anything up, so there's something going on.
Yeah, and that's actually the first scene that we're like introduced to in the movie. Like the first shot of the entire film, you see this, you know, this guy, this character that you don't recognize the guy, the actor, and you're like, okay, where's this play into it? And it's like basically, you know, a teenager being scared out of his mind, and he's hiding in the house, and his parents are dead, and you see him basically attacked as the last shot, and then it goes to, like, you know, us meeting Charlie and meeting Ed and all these people, but you find out that that's the friend that they're worried about and that's missing now, and a friend that Charlie used to have, but because of his new associations, he's not close with anymore, but, you know, Ed goes to him for help because he's concerned. he starts noticing a lot of people, not just the friend, have been missing from the school or from the town. And, you know, he tries to appeal to him to try to help him, but it kind of falls on deaf ears, as you can kind of hear in that clip. So, you know, that's kind of the start of the film. You do see that Charlie has, like, this beautiful girlfriend played by Imogen Poots, and she's beautiful, which is probably part of the reason he's trying to be a cool kid now and, you know, keep this girlfriend. But, I mean, if you've seen the original film, a lot of the plot points are pretty much the same in this one. A lot of cool new angles for some of those things, for some of the characters, for some of the background stories of the characters and such. But the big angle that this film takes is that it's a 3D film now, of course, in 2011. Everything feels like it's 3D.
Yeah.
So, yeah, that's a part of the experience, too. So anybody that's, you know, have seen the original film, it's got the pretty much the same plot. And you basically jump off from the point that Ronald was just saying, where Ed has basically told Charlie he thinks his neighbor's a vampire and, you know, I need your help. Initially, Charlie really has nothing to say to him.
Yeah, nothing at all.
And, it's, you know, he doesn't react in the way that Ed hopes that he would react. And, you know, basically stands his ground, and Ed's pretty much left to fend for himself in terms of finding out what happened to the friend and also finding out if the neighbor, who is actually played by Colin Farrell, named Jerry in the film... A lot of the same names from the original. You'll notice that as well. He starts to investigate him himself. Doesn't end so well for him, but yeah. He kind of goes that route. But from that point, you know, we basically go through this journey with Charlie. You know, his discovery of what's actually going on, and it's actually quite a ride.
It is.
I don't know. I feel that for people that have seen the original, you won't really. I don't feel like you'd be let down by it. Actually, I was rather impressed by it, mainly because of how true to the original that it was. But the areas of the original that maybe could have been a little better, you know, like because it was a very campy-ish 80s horror film. One of my favorites, don't get me wrong, and I'm very protective of the movie. Like, I went into it being like, if they completely screw this up, I'm going to fucking murder Craig Gillespie, who is the director of the film. But they did it right. I mean, I feel like they did a lot of great things. I think that some of the characters, like Colin Farrell, I thought he
was amazing.
I thought he was amazing as Jerry the neighbor. Like, his sex appeal, his charisma, you know, the dark broodingness that he just naturally is. Like, it plays so well with Charlie's mom, who's a single mom. You know, Toni Collette. She's a pretty woman, and
I'm a big fan.
Of Toni Collette?
Yes.
She was a little underused in the movie.
She
popped up here and there. I mean, you hear a name like that, or I don't know, like seeing her. Honestly, when I saw her and Colin Farrell attached to this horror film, I was just like, whoa, like maybe there's something good here, or maybe they just both really need a paycheck. I don't know, but I know they both have other things going on.
Big things.
Yeah, and like she has a TV series.
Yeah, the Showtime show where she has multiple personalities.
Yeah, the United States of Tarot.
Yeah, United States of Tarot. That's a really good show. He's right. She was kind of understated, but she was a very good character. And that's kind of how Jerry used his masculine wiles to kind of get to her and kind of get to this house. And once Jerry sees that Charlie is kind of investigating, he tries to use Charlie's mom as a means to kind of get into the house and take advantage of them.
Your mom, she didn't exactly say, but there's a kind of neglect. Gives off a scent. You don't mind my saying, you got a lot on your shoulders for a kid. The two of you, alone, and your girl, Amy, she's ripe. I bet there's a line of guys dying to pluck that. Your mom, too. You don't see it. Maybe you do, but she's putting it out. It's on you to look out for them. You up for that, guy?
So that clip right there is actually one of the coolest scenes in the film, because at that point in the movie, they are both suspect of one another, like Charlie and Jerry. Oh, like, yeah. I think they in a way, figured each other out. You know, there's maybe still some uncertainty on Charlie's part in believing that it's actually happening. But this is Jerry's attempt to test him and, like, to see whether or not he does know what's going on. Because, you know, he's a fucking vampire. Like, he's watching you. Like, he knows what's going on. But it's a really cool scene where, like, it's, you know, he's asking for, you know, to borrow some beer and trying to get that invitation to house. And Charlie drops this beer. And that's, like, oh, do you want me to help you with that? And, you know, he basically shows his cards when he basically denies him helping him with his broken glass.
Oh, yeah.
And that scene right there, like, you could just see Colin Farrell switch from, like, playing it on an even tilt to him just saying, okay, I know this kid knows now.
Oh, yeah.
And he just starts to be, like, really creepy and, like, talking about his mom and just getting all up in his face. It was a really, really cool scene. And I could really tell the audience was really into it.
It was, yeah, because he's right. Steve's right. At that point, he goes from a really cool kind of, he's really chill at that point, and then he gets really intense, really aggressive in his attempts to kind of get into the house and get to them. And that's pretty much what makes the movie so intense at that point.
From there, it just jumps.
From there, yeah. It gets really, really, really crazy. I enjoyed it. Now, the 3D was kind of strange in it. It's more about layers with the way the 3D was displayed in that movie. But there were some parts where some things did jump out, which I enjoyed. So at this point, it's kind of escalating. And Charlie realizes that what Ed was saying was actually true. But at this point, Ed has kind of disappeared.
Yeah, I mean, not to ruin anything, but anybody sees in the original, you know, Ed, who is also referred to as Evil, which I really appreciate that they maintain that name, because seeing as a fan of the original film, the name Evil, it's something that's always stayed with me. And the guy that played Evil, Stephen Jeffries, I was hoping that he might pop up in a cameo or something like that here. But you basically see Jerry, like, he basically quote unquote kills Ed in one of the scenes. It's actually a really cool scene in the pool, and it's like, this is a great example of what I meant when I said that they took some of the things from the originals and just, like, made them better.
Mm-hmm.
Like, in the original film, when Jerry, who's played by Chris Sarandon, kills Ed, or turns Ed, either way, he basically, like, plays to his insecurities, you know? He plays to the fact that he knows he's an outsider, he's unwanted by friends, his friends turned his back on him.
Right.
And he offers that acceptance, you know, I will accept you, I can turn you, you know, you can be with me, you know, and always feel incredible. And it's a really cool scene in the pool where you just see Ed kind of just give in and just go for it. And, you know, at that point, he does disappear from the film. But I don't know, it's a really cool scene, though.
Yeah, so at this point, Charlie is realizing that what Ed was saying is true, and he needs to seek out some help. So he seeks out the help of Peter Vincent.
Good old Peter Vincent.
Peter Vincent is like a, man, he's like a magician slash Charlie.
He's like Chris Angel.
Chris Angel with,
mixed with like Russell Brand.
It's very weird, this character.
What a character he is. And you actually see later in the scenes with him that he just is a character. Like, everything about him is fake. And, you know, he has some sort of foundation that is rooted in what he does as a profession, like as this illusionist and whatever the hell he is. But, like, literally there's scenes where he's, like, taking off wigs and mustaches and goatees and earrings and eye rings and all this stuff. But you see him layer down to, like, his bareness, and you kind of see that he's still a pretty vulnerable person, like when Charlie's trying to appeal to help with him. But I don't know, check this scene out right here. This is a really good example of Peter trying to have a conversation with Charlie and it not going so well.
Say I wanted to kill a vampire.
Yeah, sorry, go on.
How would I go about doing that?
You want to know how to kill a vampire? Seriously?
Yeah, kill a vampire.
Well, let's think. Well, you got fire. Beheading. You can make him a big garlicky omelet. All go traditional. Steak through the heart. BAM!
Cool, so that stuff really works?
Well, maybe not the omelet.
So yeah, it's Peter Vincent, the Chris Angel-like character slash Russell Brand character. He's really kind of hesitant to take the advice of Charlie that this guy is hoarding people, trying to get these people together to form whatever it is. Like, something's going on. So yeah. he needs Peter's help. Peter does have the wherewithal. He does have the research. He's done research. It's apparent when he goes to visit him that there's, like, artifacts and things of that nature.
Yeah, like, stuff he's collected over time. Like,
but what sparks it is that he took a picture in Jerry's room of a picture of a logo that he didn't know the significance of it, and he shows it to Peter Vincent. He's like, oh, shit, this is crazy. This is real.
That's when you see it click.
Yeah, like, and this guy really believes that Charlie's telling the truth, and this guy really is a vampire, so...
Yeah, and he kind of, like, turns Charlie away, but then realizes that this picture is, like, of significance, and you can see it turn over. And anybody of, like, any fans of, like, Doctor Who series, like, the most recent one, you know who David Tennant is. That's who plays Peter Vincent in this version of Fright Night. He was also, like, Barty Crouch Jr. in, like, Harry Potter films. But super charismatic. I thought he was incredible as Peter Vincent. Completely different angle that Roddy McDowall played in the original. He's a young showman, you know, very confident, very cocky, very, like, high luxury, where in the original, Roddy McDowall was kind of like a joke. Like, he had, you know, it was basically a really crappy show, Fright Night, that he had, and, you know, he had his followers, but he was an older man, you know, nothing really to his name, but he, you know, put on this facade, and this version of Peter Vincent is very similar, but to the other extreme.
Oh, like, yeah.
He literally has an entire level of a penthouse, you know.
Woman with him.
Beautiful woman, like a women, women, I guess, when women, we first see him. Yeah. And then you see, I guess he's married, but very cool character. David Tennant takes it to a couple different levels than Roddy McDowall did with the humor. And also just like with, I think he has a lot of charisma too that really plays through. I think that also... Something I want to point out is there's a scene when, you know, we're at the point where Charlie knows that Jerry is after them. The scene actually, I think, begins when Charlie and his girlfriend are visiting, the girlfriend's name is Amy, are visiting Peter again for help, because this is really happening now. Like, Jerry is literally after them now. They've been attacked by him on the highway, you know, they've injured him, but they need help.
Yeah.
And this is where the scene kind of really kind of kicks into the third act, and like it gets really exciting, because that's when we see Evil again. Evil comes up to Jerry's penthouse, I mean to Peter's penthouse level, and you see that he's been turned into a vampire. There's all these fighting going on. Peter Vincent, you know, the coward that he is, locks himself in a panic room and is watching it from cameras, but Charlie and Amy are able to defend themselves at some level. But Jerry's there now, you know, this master badass vampire. Oh, yeah. And it escalates where they are able to get out of the room, but they're down in like a dance club at the bottom of the hotel.
Oh, yeah, that scene.
And it's that, like, weird. And it's like and it's a cool scene, because like it's another scene that happened in the original, but just kind of got tweaked a little bit. You know, where basically Charlie and Amy get separated. They're trying to call for help, and they get separated because of the crowd and the music and just the energy in this club. And of course, Amy finds her way to Jerry, and Jerry kind of works that vampire, that magic, that eye, the hell they exude.
That glamour.
There you go. That true blood glamour. And basically, Charlie watches Jerry, you know, take his girl away, and you know, it's a awesome scene.
It's
really cool. The energy in it, mixed with, you can see how like, how frustrated and just completely helpless Charlie is in the moment. Like, he literally can do nothing to try to get help.
I enjoy scenes like that. I enjoy scenes that are like the point of no return scenes, where his girl is captured. He has to do something about it.
Yeah.
It went from just running away from this guy to he has to face this guy, because he literally captured this girl, put her in a pit, and then she's down there, kind of where the story picks up and gets... It goes from crazy to almost insane. So this is the part where it gets crazy, where they're in this pit almost, in his house.
Yeah, at the bottom of Jerry's house.
Now, all these people that were that had disappeared, you have no idea where they went at this point.
Right.
And then you realize that he had kind of been harvesting these vampires. And there's a scene where all these people that had been captured disappeared. start emerging from these dirt walls. It is a creepy scene.
Yeah, and it's really cool because the build-up to that is, like, where you see the connection between Peter and Charlie. Like, they meet back up after all these bad things have happened and Amy's been taken. Mm-hmm. You know, Charlie finds Peter for, like, one last plea. Like, I need your help. Like, mm-hmm. I know you know this is real now. And they get on the same page, and they come up with this plan. And this is when they kind of infiltrate Jerry's house and have an idea of where this, I guess, cavern is, or, you know, this dwelling area where, after you see it, you think back earlier in the movie, and a lot of it makes sense, because, like, when you first see Jerry, like, there's this huge dumpster in the front of his house, and all this concrete, and, like, material, like, building material, and you're like, where'd it come from? And he said he had to rebuild his basement, and then you really basically see that he gutted out the foundation of the house and made this, like, nest under the house. Where he's keeping Amy, and also where he has all these, as we find out, like you were just alluding to, these, like, little bodies, like all these people that he has collected. Because you basically find out through Peter Vincent that the breed of vampire that Jerry is the kind that creates, like, a little clan or a colony to basically
take over,
assume dominance or resume dominance or either one. And it's really cool because, like, there's a moment where Peter Vincent thinks he has Jerry because, like, Jerry has left Amy to kind of have her way with Charlie and hopefully be able to glamour him and take care of that. So Peter and Jerry are having their big showdown in this big open mud, like, dirt area. There's nothing around.
Yeah.
And then Jerry, I don't even know what the line was, but Jerry just looks at Peter and, you know, you see that look like, is that really what you thought was going to happen when you come down here? Like, it was going to be that easy.
Yeah.
And then as soon as Peter turns, like, you see all these bodies crawling out of the sides of the foundation, like, just dirt.
Yeah.
Cutouts in the foundation where there's just dirt. And it's like, vampires, like, hatching, pretty much. Yeah.
It's kind of gross looking, but I love it.
It's gross, but it's really cool. It's creepy too, because like then you realize the levity is completely out of it because they're joking around a little bit, and then it just gets really, really crazy. And all the characters that go missing earlier in the film, you start to see them all again, like the friend. You see that some of the other high school kids that that the vampire or that Jerry killed earlier in the film, and God, it's a pretty fucking cool scene.
It is. It is. Bear in mind that Peter Vincent at this point is, he's like dressed up almost like Blade.
Charlie has his, you know, Charlie's also like geared up, ready to go. They go to like get all the, they do their little shopping thing, like where they get all the materials and
steaks.
Yeah.
Holy water and stuff. So it's pretty cool.
They're definitely prepped, but not for what they thought.
Yeah. Yeah.
Was coming.
I enjoyed Jerry's character a lot. He was really, wasn't over the top, even despite the fact that he was really, really crazy. It seemed very believable in the world that they were in. And I enjoyed seeing, it was a little different for the guy. Seeing him in the movie where Colin Farrell was actually something completely different in that way.
He's always kind of got like that badass vibe. Like, like people either like hate him or they like really like him. Yeah. I really like Colin Farrell. I think like a lot of people just think he's like a big asshole and like from his personal problems and such. But he like totally plays it up in this movie. Like for this character, like plays up those preconceptions of like what he is, like he's at one of those Hollywood bad boys or whatever.
Yeah.
And the scenes where he just doesn't even say anything, like he's just looking at them and like just you can just see him in his mind thinking like, they have no fucking idea.
Yeah.
You know, they have no idea what I'm able to do. And it's cool because like he doesn't really have to do anything. Like he just has this natural, you know, he could I buy it. Like he could be a vampire. Like he might actually be one. I'm not sure.
Well, I think he might be. The one thing I thought that was really cool that that I guess we didn't talk about as much, that you kind of hinted at.
Yeah.
There were a lot of scenes where he just didn't talk very much.
Yeah.
Like the scene where he came to the front for the beer, that scene was long. That scene was very lengthy. And there was a point where he just paced for like 30 seconds. And
he's just like walking around and looking down and he looks up at him again. And you're just like, God damn, he is like just circling that prey.
Yeah, he wants to destroy this dude.
And that's like we kind of talked about it, like just in his eyes and like in his, even like his hair and like what he's doing, like his mannerisms, like running his hands through his hair. He's just so like not concerned with anything possibly derailing this plan that he has.
Yeah.
And I love how he's just like feeling Charlie out to see like, well, how much does this kid know? You know? Cool stuff like that.
That's one thing that's really cool about Charlie's character. So Charlie is kind of presenting himself like he's this really cool kid, hipster, jeans, sneakers, the whole nine. But the fact of the matter is, because he is a pretty nerdy guy and kind of has an understanding of the kind of fantasy world that he that exists, his caution is what kind of keeps him alive.
Yeah.
And that's really cool. There's a point where Ed kind of threatens, if he doesn't help him, to expose him to the school and show this really nerdy kind of fantasy fighting YouTube video that they're
doing. Yeah.
Which is really, really funny. And you get an idea of how nerdy this guy really is. And Amy kind of says, his girlfriend kind of says that she knows that he's not the coolest guy in the world. And he doesn't have to really act as if he is. But he's a really cool character. He's innocent enough, but still very aggressive when he needs to be.
Yeah.
Well, it kind of bothers me, though, that people like him are always they suddenly get aggressive when shit gets crazy. That's kind of weird sometimes.
Like, do you feel like it's just, like, pulled from nowhere?
Yeah, it's pulled from nowhere, man. Like, I feel like, I don't know. Maybe you suspend belief, yes, but everybody can't be that brave. That's, you know what I mean? Everybody can't be there.
And that's kind of what gets played up a lot of times. Like, it's that person that is, like, the meek one. You know, that you wouldn't expect it from. Because that's where the character development comes in, you know. That's kind of where that person, quote-unquote, steps it up.
Right.
And then you have on the other side of the thought is that the person who's, like, the strong person, the loud one, the leader, quote-unquote, of the group, they're usually the one that, like, dies, like, right away. Like in this film, that guy, one of the high schoolers, was actually played by David Franco, who is apparently James Franco's brother.
Oh, the big bully dude?
Yeah, the whole time, I'm like, this looks like James... It looks like James Franco, and then it's his brother.
Yeah.
So, like, that. Like, he's, like, the badass at school. Like, he's, like, the cool guy that Charlie has, like, basically changed his whole life around to be included in that group.
Yeah.
And this guy bullies evil, and, you know, he's an asshole. And he gets killed early on in the film, but that's my point. Like, he's the one that, in this world, in reality, you think would, like, take care of a situation.
Yeah.
But, you know, it's the people that really don't expect it from, that maybe don't wear it on their sleeves as much, are the ones that actually pull it out of nowhere.
Yeah.
It didn't really, like, bother me, almost because, like, I feel like you expect that a lot of times from the movies. And having seen the original, not that even you needed to see the original to see this film at all, but, like, you know the character.
Yeah.
They step it up when they need to. That's a lot of movies.
I guess also because Ed was his friend and he was a vampire, it kind of made it easier for him to be a little more, you know, aggressive towards somebody. He knew him, you know what I mean?
Yeah.
So he's like trying to attack him. He knows this guy, so he's like, oh.
I almost feel like in situations like that, I almost want to believe that there's like a piece of him that's like, I have to kill him.
Yeah.
Like, so that he can like actually rest in peace if he's dead, you know?
Yeah.
That's really off the wall, and like that makes make me sound like a wimp or something. But I feel like if it was my friend and like
out.
The guy that I didn't believe and like he's and he got turned,
yeah,
you know, I would feel so much like I'd feel accountable for that. And I
so you'd feel obligated to kill him?
I'd feel like well, one, I don't want him to kill me, but I'd feel like that just reasons it even more for me to be like, it's cool, though, because if I kill him, he's already fucking dead. Like, I need to kill him now so that he's not suffering.
Yeah.
He's not something that he never wanted to be. Like, now he's something that, like, he was scared of. Like,
very true.
Am I getting really deep into this?
This is deep. It's
getting
You're
deep. Literally cracking up.
because I never thought about it like that. You know what else I was thinking about? I don't even remember this. Does Ed live in the end?
No, he kills him.
He's just dead.
He kills him, yeah. Like, he, like... I forget if he stabs him with a stake or does something to him, but, like, he...
Oh, yeah, he turns into...
Like...
When you're that dead, when he stabbed him in the chest or something.
Uh-huh.
Right? And then he just turned into...
Like, dust or
he was
gone.
Super dead at that point.
Yeah, I mean and he kind of cremated him, so he still did him a favor, I guess, you know?
Like, he did him a favor.
He took him out. He took him out. Like, if it was you, or if it was me, like, I'd say, if I turn into a vampire and I'm trying to kill you, I give
you
permission. No, either way, if I get turned and I'm, like, coming after you to kill you,
yeah.
I sell you right now. You can kill me. Put me out of my misery.
Okay.
Don't let me kill you, because, you know, that's
this
just two dead people.
Because
I'm already dead.
I watched True Blood, so I'd silver you down.
Silver me down.
And then I'd walk away until the spell.
To the spell?
To the spell.
You know, that's the one thing I thought about, because at the end, what we find out with the kind of vampire that Jerry is, when they end up, you know, basically destroying him,
yeah.
All the vampires that he... all the vampires that he turned come back to life.
I wish at the end that he would have dealt with that. Like, it would have been real. Like, if it were like, fuck, I killed my friend. He could have lived.
Now that we discussed this, evil could have survived.
He could have survived.
Now I take back a lot of what I said.
He has to live with that.
Oh, damn. What a realization. My mind just got blown.
Imagine if he would have killed his girlfriend. He would have been like, ah. Oh,
he almost had to, yeah.
Yeah.
But I think at that point when they were defending themselves and he has to kill evil, it's like evil's about to kill him, and it's like kill or be killed, and or they just didn't even, I don't know, even at that point in the film if he knew that the bodies would, or that the vampires would turn back.
Yeah, so.
Let's talk about the 3D. How do you feel about it?
Oh, man, 3D.
I know that we've talked about it a few times on our podcast. Like,
right. In this case, I don't know if it was necessary.
Did it hurt the movie?
I don't think it hurt.
Okay.
I don't think it hurt it. It really didn't feel like it was nothing about it felt 3D except for a couple parts where there was like purposefully something thrown towards your face.
It did have a couple of those like quick, like cheap ones, like where they throw something out, or like when the body explodes, like all the little particles, you see it, like it's in the audience. Again, like I'm still looking for, I mean, there's been a very select few films that I can actually watch and say that I see the 3D having any like value added for the film. I just really hate how it's like it is becoming like a marketing thing, like Fright Night 3D. It's like, why does Fright Night have to be in 3D? You know, like I don't know. The reason I ask is I don't think it hurt the movie, but like some movies it actually can add something to, and there's only been like two or three that I felt that way about.
Yeah. Was it filmed in 3D? It was filmed with 3D cameras. The thing. Like it didn't feel like it would it benefited the movie at all. Like there were, it didn't feel very layered. Like some movies like Avatar, I mean, amazing because it felt layered. Yeah. When I watched this movie, it didn't feel.
It just is an unnecessary thing. Yeah. And what about the CGI? I know we talked about that when we came out of theater. I know you had a big problem with that.
Yeah, so I have a big problem with CGI being used unnecessarily. So I didn't understand how he went from. So for those of you who are going to see this movie or have seen it, did you notice that there were like two modes of vampire for Jerry's character? There was like the plain like fangs out, and then there was like this monster like mode where he was in that was CGI, and I didn't understand why the second one was used.
Like why there was like a monster.
Why the latter was used? I don't understand why that was used.
Yeah, I mean in the original like. Jerry, like Chris Sarandon, which by the way, that was the cameo I was referring to earlier. I didn't mention it, but the original Jerry Dandridge from Fright Night in the 80s, Chris Sarandon does have a cool cameo in this movie where Colin Farrell basically, you know, destroys him. Yeah. But it's cool. But to get back to your point, in the original, like Jerry does change into a quote unquote vampire. Like he physically changes from his like human form to something else. And back then, obviously, it was like all makeup based.
Right.
Which I feel like is okay, but there are scenes in this film where like Colin Farrell, like, you know, his eyes black out and he's got the fangs and like
I like that part.
Like that was menacing enough for me. I feel like just like in True Blood, like just because we've mentioned it a few times, like when they turn into their vampire self or like they show their fangs, like that's it. That's all you need. That's scary enough.
You don't need this monster mold shit that keeps happening. It's so weird. Like it doesn't contribute anything to. It's like almost like a. Half wolf, half...
Yeah, it's like a shock thing. Like, I feel like it's just something like, let's just flex a little bit of CGI muscle and see what we can do for a vampire.
CGI happens to be... I dread it, honestly. Yeah. It's just that, man, maybe one day in the future we'll be able to look back at CGI back now and say, oh, man, remember when it looked like shit? Because it looks like shit now. I mean, like, not everything. I think that it didn't look... It didn't bother me so much that I didn't enjoy the movie.
Yeah.
But it has a tendency sometimes to look unnatural. There's something about the look of a human being and the look of CGI that's very different. Like, prime example, the beginning of Tron. I don't know if you remember the beginning of Tron where they used CGI. Because obviously some of those characters weren't going to be the same age now.
Yeah. 2010,
2011. looked very weird.
Yeah.
Like, it's just something wasn't natural about their movements. So I get a little annoyed by that.
Yeah, I mean, it didn't really bother me until it was brought up to me, like, by you. But discussing it, I do think it was unnecessary.
It's very unnecessary.
It wasn't something to me that was like, oh, God, this makes me not like the movie. But, yeah, when you think about the things that are unnecessary in a film that, for the most part, is pretty lean and mean, and
yeah,
it's a pretty badass horror film, I honestly would have been just as frightened and or more scared of Colin Farrell, like, just as Colin Farrell with fangs and black eyes.
Absolutely.
You with his hair slicked back and, like, just kind of being that cool as a cucumber but with fucking fangs. Like,
yeah.
That would scare me.
That would satisfy
me. And when he turns into the monster, like, on the highway scene where Chris Sarandon has his cameo or in the big showdown at the end, you know, it just, yeah, it is really excessive and it doesn't even really, it almost is, it's not even scary. It's like,
no.
It's almost like... like laughable almost.
Yeah,
like you're just like, it's kind of ridiculous looking.
Yeah, I think I'd take it more seriously if that were the case, if they just kept it where he was just, you know, black eyes and fangs.
Yeah.
I mean, because that's scary. Like it's closer to what you believe somebody would look like if they were to change. I don't think that, I don't know.
I just feel like the most impressive vampires in, like, in movies that I remember, you know, aren't ones that necessarily have a physical difference from their human form.
Yeah.
Like, there's some, you know, in Bram Stoker's Dracula, like, he changes a couple of different ways, but, like, an Interview with a Vampire, you know, and obviously, like, the Twilights and, you know, the True Blood, like, the modern horror with vampire mythology, like, I don't feel like a lot of them rely on that, like, changing forms. Like, you were a human at some point. So you changed, and you're a vampire, so why do you look like a monster now? But apparently, like, from some of the mythology and some of the where it comes from, some of them are actually not humans in a way. They're, like, actually, you know, beasts or whatever. I don't know, but, I would definitely agree with your point. I think it was unnecessary.
Crazy
scene. That movie could have done without any CGI whatsoever.
Yeah, I mean, it would have been fine.
Yeah, I would agree with
that. And I get that you have to use it for, like, explosions and car flips and stuff like that. I get that.
Yeah.
Nobody's going to necessarily do some of the stuff that he did.
Sure.
But, yeah, I CGI weirds me out sometimes. But
sure.
The movie, very satisfying. It was very entertaining. I loved when we saw it. It was like a packed house.
Oh, yeah.
People were reacting.
Sold out.
I really enjoy watching movies like that with people.
Yeah.
It's a different sort of experience.
Definitely definitely worth checking out. All the pretty much the whole cast is solid. I mean, McLovin is McLovin. I feel like he is like typecast. Like, that kid will never have a different character to play, unfortunately.
Yeah, that sucks.
Like, even in, like, Kick-Ass and anything he's been in, like, I just feel like he still kind of is that same that same guy. Because I honestly just think that's who he is. Like, Christopher Mintz-Plasse, like, every time I've seen him do interviews or publicity stuff, like, he's just that. That's him. Like, he's not acting, I don't think.
Yeah.
Colin Farrell's awesome. Anton Yelchin is, you know, he's good. He's a good actor. He's been in some really cool movies. He's in a couple movies coming up that I really want to see. There's a film coming out called Like Crazy. It's like a romantic drama coming out later this year.
Mm-hmm.
And he's been in a few things recently. Like, he was in Jodie Foster's directorial debut of The Beaver. And he was in, what, Star Trek? I don't know. He was awesome.
He was.
So they're filming a sequel to that, so he'll be in that, I'm sure.
And Salvation. I like Salvation.
Yeah, that's okay.
Him in Salvation. I liked him.
I was okay with it, yeah.
The
movie
itself was kind of crappy.
Yeah. But I think the star of the film is Colin Farrell.
Oh, yeah.
David Tennant is really cool as Peter Vincent, but the screen time he gets is a little minimal compared to the other screen actors. But Colin Farrell, just, like, I feel like for his name and who he is and his notoriety... And taking a role like that, I think he did it justice, and I think he kind of gave it a whole new spin. And he's just cool. I don't know. He's a good guy. But definitely worth checking out, whether you see it in 3D or 2D. I don't think it's necessary to pay the extra money for the 3D.
Don't.
Unless you're really just, like, in love with that gimmick. It's totally up to you. But definitely worth checking out. If you can see where the crowd is, a fun movie to see in a crowd, even though some people are assholes and don't know how to turn their cell phones off. But, you know, I'd say go for it for this film. It's not something that you have to, like, truly pay attention to every single scene. You can just have some fun with the crowd and just enjoy Friday Night. In case you don't know, I'm not like an idiot. That's for those of you who don't know, I'm a big fan of the original. Ronald's, like, losing his mind. But that's what it sounded like. That's what Peter Vincent's little tagline was at the show he had. Whatever. I'm a loser.
I enjoyed that.
Yeah, you're welcome. So anyway, we're going to move on to this week's DVD quick picks. Kick it off, bro.
Yeah, so I chose Battle Royale, which is in no way related to...
whatsoever.
Yeah. So it's basically a Japanese movie that came out about 11 minutes. 11 minutes ago.
It came out while you were listening to this podcast. It
came out 11 years ago. It is hilarious. It is one of those movies that...
Hilarious? It is
because of how absurd it is.
Oh, my
God.
So
it's basically the Japanese government... captures a bunch of students, puts them on the island, and then sets up this game where portions of the island detonate these collars around their necks that could make them explode. So it's down to the basically the person that survives survives. Like you could kill these people, you could leave them at a certain part of the island. It's a very weird movie, but. It's so popular in Japan and here that Quentin Tarantino had considered making an American version of it. I think he could do it some justice, but that's been thrown around for about 3-4 years with really no luck. It didn't pick up any steam. But Battle Royale is a great experience. It's start to finish. It's an absurd concept. Just kind of kids getting captured. I don't know. If you want to see explosions and death and misery, Battle Royale is a great, great, great movie.
Who doesn't want that every day, right?
Who doesn't want that? An absurd movie with explosions.
See the movie, too. It is quite entertaining. It's very out there and different. And
yeah.
Is it Japanese? Or
it's Japanese.
Yeah, like just that whole the culture, just something that would be very hard to, I feel like, created in the American culture or society would not accept it as well if it had originated here, I don't think.
Yeah, one of the ladies, Chiyotaki Kiriyama, she played a character in Kill Bill. She played, what's her name, Agogo? Crap, I can't remember.
Oh, right, yeah, I know who you're talking
about.
The
one with the yo-yo.
Yeah.
The character with the yo-yo in Kill Bill, she plays that character. Actually, Quentin Tarantino found her through that movie. He was interested in her through that movie.
And I mean, the implications on like real life with like kids and students, it's kind of heavy. It's kind of scary.
It is.
And I feel like with some of the tragedies that happened in the past like 5 or 6 years at schools and you know with teenagers and stuff like you know the Virginia Tech stuff, I remember reading back when that happened like with some of the producers. I think New Line was trying to remake this film, and it pretty much derailed like that kind of stuff. Yeah, the real life implications of it, I think, really kind of ruined any chance of a U.S. adaptation of it. But it is definitely worth checking out. It's very different. It's weird to say, but very entertaining. It's very suspenseful. So yeah, I don't know. Battle Royale. My pick this week is not really related either, except for that it's a campy horror film. I was watching Ronald's recommendation from the last episode, Super, recently, directed by James Gunn, and it reminded me of his film Slither. So Slither from like 06, is going to be my quick pick this week. Basically... Slither is a campy horror film about alien parasites invading a small town. I'm not even sure where the town is, but it's so small that the local sheriff knows everybody. Pretty cool cast. Nathan Fillion, who I'm a really big fan of, Elizabeth Banks, Michael Rooker, are in the film as well. I love 80s horror films and just how they didn't take themselves too seriously. Could you know put that tongue in the cheek intentionally and be okay with it? And Slither made no money at the box office, maybe a little bit on home video, but it is that kind of movie that if it had come out in the 80s, it probably would have been like one of those successful cult films that has a following. And I think it does have a following now that it's on DVD, but it's just a fun. It's got humor. The characters don't take anything too seriously. You have to, you know, you're basically in it with them and what's going on with this crazy-ass alien that's taking over their town. They look like little slugs, you know, like kind of like Invasions of the Body Snatcher-ish. But cool performances from Elizabeth Banks, who I think is hilarious in everything she's in.
I love Elizabeth
Very
Banks.
Subtle in some cases, but very over the top in others. And this one is kind of in between. But a really fun... I know you weren't a big fan of it, but...
No,
I thought it was a really... It is gross. It's that 80s gross, like, campy horror film. Which I think James Gunn, you know, he's basically admitted to, like, you know, basically basing this film on a lot of things from the 80s, like Invasions of the Body Snatchers, Or even movies like Tremors or Night of the Living Dead, stuff like that. And the movie that reminds me the most of is a movie that is probably one of my favorite 80s horror films. It's called Night of the Creeps. Tom Atkins is in it. Literally, alien slugs get down your throat, take over your body, you're zombies. Or you're whatever the hell you are. Very similar to this film, but James Gunn definitely put a nod to that film. I think he's even said that in interviews. But if you're looking for just like a crazy 80s, you know, wannabe horror camp thriller, I'd say go with Slither. Don't listen to Ronald.
It reminds me of a movie. You remember that movie, The Stuff?
The Stuff.
It was this movie called The Stuff.
No.
It was a gross movie that came out in the 80s, and it was like goo that attacked people. It was so gross. The Stuff.
Do you mean The Blob?
No, it's called The Stuff.
I'm looking it up now.
The IMDb.
I do know this movie.
This movie was terrible. It was so gross.
I can see you thinking of that, but that movie sucked, man.
That movie did
suck. I remember seeing it when I was a kid. This one, I don't know. It's not. I will say this. It's not for everyone. Like, my girlfriend, a lot of my friends hated it when I showed it to them. But they also don't have the background of, you know, the liking for some of those 80s horror films that a lot of people hate that I love. So you have to have that flavor for your taste. But I don't know. Slither, it's good times. Give it a shot. Give it a shot. But that's going to wrap it up for this very special 10th episode.
Oh, yeah.
I say special because it's basically talking about horror movies, which I fucking love horror movies.
Yeah.
I'm always looking for a good horror movie, and I think Fright Night is a very great horror movie. I'd say even better than really good. I'd say it's great. Very surprised, you know, end of summer release. Like, I guess maybe they were hoping to catch people by surprise, but usually you get movies coming out this time of year that aren't that great, but Fright Night and then Rise of the Planets of the Apes, another example, came out a few weeks ago.
Great movie.
It was incredible. But, yeah, horror all the way. Hit us up on the blog. Hit us up on, you know, our email address. It's movieschmovie@gmail.com. Curious if you guys have any other recommendations for me, maybe some other good horror movies that I haven't seen. I'm always looking for stuff that maybe flew under the radar. So if you have any good ideas, send it our way. And pertaining to those sites, like we said at the beginning, you know, just keep talking to us, please. Sending in the suggestions for the Mighty Minute reviews. If you see us post stuff on Facebook and you like us on there, you have us, you follow our page, please share it. The little button that says share. Basically, it does all the work for you. All you have to do is click share and then post, and it basically shares the link.
Oh, yeah.
So when we post the podcast on there or whatever it is, if you can help us get it to more people, that's going to make this a little bit more successful. So
definitely. Hit us up. Twitter.com/movieschmovie.
Yeah, Twitter.
Yeah. You said Facebook, right?
Facebook.com/movieschmovie@gmail.com. I almost said AOL. AOL. I just went back to like 7th grade.
Oh, yeah. Damn. Screen names and stuff.
Oh, man. I still have the same screen name from like 6th grade.
Really? I still have the same AIM screen name as I did when I was like 15.
Yeah, same.
I still use it too.
I use it for everything. It's the same thing but at Gmail.
That's fun.
So, yeah. So, hit us up. I mean, I don't know. I feel like I always say it, and I feel like a broken record saying that I'm a broken record, but I just, you know.
It's important.
Everything that I really love online, it's going because I know that I'm a part of it. You know, like I follow it or I share it with my friends. It's awesome to share something with someone and then see everyone start talking about it. Like there's been a few times when I feel like I've been like, hey, I kind of started that, or I kind of was one of the first people to listen to that.
Oh, yeah.
Definitely. So hopefully if we get to a point where we actually have a pretty sizable listenership, you know, hopefully you're a part of that group that can say, you know, you were a part of what made it happen, you know, so
yeah, definitely
do your part, please. We love you and thank you for it. And, go see
really
Fright
Night.
Dude, what's wrong with me? I think I need like
some
like chai tea or something. I don't know, man. I feel very emotional right now.
I know what you mean.
Yeah. It's a really important thing to me.
The 10th one. That's what it is.
It's special, Ronald.
It's special.
It's very special. But yeah, thanks so much, guys. And as always, you've made our day, and we'll talk to you soon.
All right. Bye-bye.